Chapter 16. So Dan, in just over 24 hours' time, you'll be stepping out of the International Space Station to spacewalk to the Lux Eterna launch platform. There you will launch the Lightswarm probe, sending those tiny spaceships on a 100 trillion kilometre trip to the stars in search of alien life. How are you feeling? The camera cuts from the glossy-haired presenter on the breakfast TV sofa to my dad on board the International Space Station. He's floating in exactly the same place as where I spoke to him yesterday, holding one finger to his ear as he waits to hear the question. Daddy! Charlie throws her arms up in excitement at the sight of Dad on the TV screen. Her left hand catches the edge of her porridge bowl, flipping it up into the air before gravity drops its contents all over Grandad. Oh, Charlie! Mum says, grabbing a cloth from the kitchen sink as the porridge bowl clatters to a halt at her feet. Grandad looks down at his Death Panda t-shirt. Charlie's porridge splats, giving the cartoon panda on the front a messy makeover. Shocked by the launch of her UFP, unexpected flying porridge, Charlie bursts into tears and I have to strain my ears to catch Dad's reply. I feel very proud, he says, a slight buzzing echo on his words as they bounce around the world. Everyone's worked so hard to make the mission a success, from the scientists and engineers back at home who developed and built the light swarm technology to all the astronauts who constructed the orbital launch platform. I'm just a small cog in a much larger machine, but I feel hugely honoured that when I press that button at the launch platform tomorrow, I will be helping the human race to take our first step to the stars. And how do you think your family will be feeling now? The presenter asks as the time delay kicks in again. I should be feeling proud too, but instead, I just feel so resentful. It seems like Dad's more bothered about being a famous astronaut now than he is about being a dad. I look around the kitchen table. Mum's giving Charlie a hug, my little sister still sobbing as Grandad tries to de-porridge his t-shirt with a wet cloth. Maybe family life just isn't exciting enough for him. I think they might be a little bit nervous, Dad finally replies. But hopefully, they're all feeling proud of me. We all are, Dan, the TV presenter says with a smile. There's only 10 seconds left on the satellite, so we've got to let you go now, but everyone here wishes you the best of luck with your mission tomorrow. With a final wave, the picture of my dad disappears from the screen to be replaced by a weather map. And to find out whether it'll be bright and sunny for Dan's spacewalk, let's hear the forecast from Claire. Reaching for the remote, Mum switches off the TV, prompting a fresh howl from Charlie. Come on, silly, Mum says, giving Charlie a cuddle as she lifts her out of her chair. Your dad will be home soon. She looks cross at me as I push my own chair back from the table. Do you want to lift to school, Jamie, after I've dropped Charlie off at nursery? Feeling the faint buzz of my mobile phone in the depths of my pocket, I quickly shake my head. If Mum gets me in the car on my own, she'll just start talking about the divorce, and that's the last thing I want to think about right now. No thanks, I'd rather walk today. I've not had a chance to look at my phone properly since it went all intergalactic on me last night. When I got back to my room after putting Charlie to bed, buzz seemed to have shut down. Now as I near the school gates with my mobile in my hand, my thumb hovers over the spiral icon, just waiting for it to start spinning again. To be honest, I didn't sleep much last night. In science fiction films, there are usually two types of aliens. There are the cute, cuddly ones like E.T., who just wants to get back to their home on their own planet, and then there are the big, bug-eyed aliens who blow up the White House and take over the world. Now, I'm really hoping that Buzz is the first type, but the thing is, there are tons more movies about the evil alien invaders, and technically, Buzz has hijacked my phone. Bzzz. Flinching in surprise, I glance down at the screen. The golden spiral is spinning again, its unfurling loop growing wider with every turn. As Buzz's voice hums from the speaker, I feel an answering buzz in my brain. Synchronizing, bzzz. What do you mean? I ask, feeling slightly panicked as the tip of my finger flickers brightly beneath the sunlight. What's happening to me? We are connected, Buzz's voice echoes inside my head. It's time for you to learn about the hive. For a second, I stare at my phone, dumbfounded. The golden spiral is still spinning, but my eyes can't seem to focus on this. It feels as though I'm looking at the screen through a piece of wire gauze, just like the ones we use in science, but this one's tinted gold. I blink, trying to clear my vision, but when I open them again, my heart skips a beat. On the screen, I can see a huge golden spiral reaching up into a purple sky, but then the picture shifts, and suddenly I'm plunging into its heart. I can almost feel the pressure of the onrushing air, the picture spiraling dizzily as it swoops through a thick golden haze. My ears pop, the sound of the humming inside my head suddenly louder. Beneath my fingers, my phone feels sticky to the touch as I watch the screen seem to expand and my vision fills with the most unbelievable sight. I'm hanging suspended in a cathedral of light, this vast space filled with endless rows of hexagonal cells spiraling in every direction. Each cell gleams with an unearthly glow, their golden light flickering to the hum of a billion buzzing voices lifted up in what sounds like a prayer. Inside my head, I feel Buzz's presence flickering inside my mind. We are old, so much older than you, and we know so much. I'm not just seeing this anymore. It's like I'm inside a liquid gold hive, or maybe it's inside of me. For a second, I almost forget to breathe, and I feel like I'm drowning in an ocean of light, every particle humming with information. I catch glimpses of impossible reflected in the light, ideas so far beyond my understanding, I can't even begin to put them into words. That's when I realise this is the hive. Everything they've ever said, everything they've ever done, everything they've ever known, their art, their science, their stories, their songs, all trapped inside this shimmering light. We are many and we are one, the living and the dead and the yet to come. We are the hive. The humming sound surrounds me now, so beautiful and strange. It's like the air itself is an invisible library, the books filled with sunlight. That's when I see them, a swarm of strange alien creatures dancing towards the light. Just like before, I can't quite make out their features, only their silvery wings beating against the shimmering air. I watch as they whirl in spiraling circles, their every moment pulsing through the vast structure until it vibrates with an unstoppable energy. This is what we were, Buzz's voice hums inside my head. Frail creatures of muscle and brain, so vulnerable to harm. We had learned so much, harnessing the energy of the stars, but then the darkness came. I don't know which way is up or down anymore. My head is spinning as Buzz's voice fills my brain. But at the summit of this spiraling hive of light, there's an open circle of sky. Through this I can see a giant sun, a golden sphere slowly being shredded into blazing jets of gas. It's as if it's being devoured by some invisible predator, flailing in its death throes as the sky turns black. The hive had to choose, our bodies or our minds. There was no choice. At the centre of the vast structure, I see a golden beam stretching up to the stars. The alien creatures spiral in perfect circles as they ascend into the heart of the shimmering beacon, their bodies surrendering to its brilliance until they can no longer be seen. We went into the light, Buzz sings. My mind reels as this golden light surrounds me too. And then we swarmed. Suddenly, I feel myself catapulted across space. It's like the intergalactic tour that Buzz gave me last night, and it's now running backwards, flares of light endlessly erupting and being extinguished in the blink of an eye. I see planets, asteroids, comets and satellites whizzing past before I catch a glimpse of the Hubble Space Telescope, its solar panels angled towards the sun as the giant eye of its lens fills the screen. I wince, waiting for an impact that never comes as the golden light spins through a whirling hall of mirrors before finally tumbling into darkness. Blinking in surprise, I open my eyes to find that I'm standing outside the school gates. The phone is still in my hand, the golden spiral slowly turning as Buzz speaks again. We are the hive. We survived. It wasn't real, I murmur, unable to shift the image of the aliens dancing to their deaths as the light swallowed them whole. That same light racing across the universe until it hit the Hubble Space Telescope. We are as real as you are, Buzz replies, the words softly buzzing from my phone. We have just moved beyond the limits of the physical world. Inside every atom in the universe is a fireball of light, a constant flow of photons that keeps every particle intact. This is where we live now, where our minds still thrive. We are creatures of the light. We are the hive. My head is spinning with everything that I've seen and heard, but it all makes a crazy kind of sense now. Professor Forster was wrong. When that light hit the Hubble Space Telescope, it wasn't a signal or some kind of message from the stars. It was the hive itself. Their entire civilization beamed across trillions of kilometers of space until it finally struck Hubble's mirror. And as the sensors at the heart of the telescope transmitted this signal to the laser optical ground station that was hooked up to Professor Forster's laptop, that was the moment I plugged my phone in. This alien intelligence was downloaded to my mobile, an extraterrestrial civilization stored on my SD card. All their knowledge, all their wisdom, all their cleverness is now sitting next to my contacts on the home screen. What do you want? I murmur. Help. Bzzz. Who are you talking to? At the sound of Minty's voice, I turn round in surprise and then nearly jump out of my skin as I see a green, bug-eyed alien staring back at me. Chapter 17. The good news is that Minty's not mutated into an alien lizard queen who wants to take over the world. She's just wearing fancy dress. The bad news is, I've forgotten to do my homework, unlike the rest of my class, who are all now dressed up like monsters out of Doctor Who. So, Jamie, Mrs. Solomon says, casting a disappointed look over my school uniform as I stand in front of her desk, I can see you've decided not to create your own intergalactic costume, but I'd still like you to tell us all about the aliens that you've invented. What kind of extraterrestrial species do you think your dad's space probes might discover? Nervously, I look up to see the rest of the class staring back at me, their weird costumes making them look like escapees from some sort of alien zoo. Aaron Johnson has got what looks like an egg whisk stuck to his middle of his forehead, while the rest of his face is painted bright blue. Leela Ali is wearing a green furry onesie with detachable alien antennae, while Jasmine Clark seems to have silver tentacles instead of her hair, although I kind of think this suits her. In the front row, someone is wearing a super-sized papier-mâché football, the whole of his fake head covered by a giant eye, and as it stares at me, along with the rest of the eyes in the classroom, I realise I don't have a clue what I'm going to say. I'm usually pretty good at getting my homework done, but with everything that's been going on, I haven't had the time to invent some make-believe alien. I've got enough problems working out what to do with this real one that's shown up on my phone. I slip my hand into my pocket, my fingers closing around my phone as I squeeze this tight, hoping that Buzz can pull another alien mind trick to magic me out of this hole. But the phone stays silent. It looks like this time I'm on my own. When you're ready, Jamie, Mrs. Solomon prompts me. You have done your homework, haven't you? Next to my empty chair, Minty grins, her green lizard face lighting up at the sight of my embarrassment. There's only one thing I can do. Tell the truth. The aliens that I've discovered, I start to explain, are called the Hive. And then it all pours out at me, everything that I found out, everything that Buzz has shown me. Using the picture I drew, I tell the class about their huge spiral cities filled with golden light, the air teeming with alien intelligence. I talk about the swarms of satellites they use to harness the power of the stars. I explain how the Hive have lived for billions of years and how they survived. And when I finally stop talking, I see my teacher staring back at me, her mouth open wide. I glance around the faces of my classmates, their alien disguises unable to hide their surprise as Minty slowly shakes her head to let me know that I've gone too far. Wow, Mrs. Solomon says when she finally remembers to speak. I wasn't expecting that. You've thought of everything, Jamie. How your alien civilization would live, the technologies they might develop, but most importantly, how they would communicate. A hive mind storing the knowledge of their entire species, living beings transformed into pure energy, travelling across the galaxy at the speed of light. It's an incredible thought. But the rest of her gushing praise is swiftly cut off as the school bell rings. As everyone starts talking at once, our teacher claps her hands. That's not the bell for break time, Classic, she explains, raising her voice above the hubbub. We're having a special assembly today in the school hall, and that's where I want you to go now. With a groan, the rest of the class start to wriggle their costumes out of their seats as they head towards the door. But as I turn to join them, Mrs. Solomon calls me back. Jamie, can I have a quick word? At first, I think she's going to give me a hard time for not dressing up like an alien, but then I spot my maths test on the desk in front of her. I know that you've struggled a little with your maths work this term, my teacher begins, fixing me with a sympathetic smile, but I wanted to talk to you about this test paper. I'm sorry I tried to use my calculator, I say quickly, thinking about Mrs. Solomon is going to mark me down for cheating or something. Mrs. Solomon shakes her head. It's not that, Jamie. It's your answer to the last question that I wanted to ask you about. She turns over my test paper to reveal the scribbled letters, symbols and numbers that cover the page. You see, most of the class stuck to inventing simple linear equations. You seem to have got a little carried away. I look down at the scrawled equation. I don't even remember writing this. I was just messing about, miss. That's what I thought, Mrs. Solomon replies. But I have a friend staying with me this week who works as a professor of particle physics at Lancaster University. She's currently running a project at the Deep Mind Lab over in Clackthorpe. My friend happened to spot your test paper and said that your equation looks a lot like the standard model. What's that? I ask, starting to feel confused. I don't know how my scruffy scribble can look like anything like a model equation. The standard model of particle physics, Mrs. Solomon replies. She frowns as if trying to work out exactly what to say. It's a little difficult for me to explain as I'm not an expert, but according to my friend, it's the theory that explains how the universe works. I look again at the scribbled lines of letters and numbers. I didn't know the universe came with instructions, but these look even more confusing than the ones that came with Charlie's flat pack wardrobe, and Dad spent the entire weekend assembling that. So how did you come to write this equation in your test, Jamie? Mrs. Solomon asks, her forehead wrinkling into a frown. My friend says she only teaches this to her master's students and didn't think that a primary school pupil would even have heard of the standard model. She's right there, but I bet Buzz has. I must have seen it somewhere, I reply, desperately trying to think of an excuse that doesn't include the alien on my phone. Maybe it's in one of my dad's books. It must have just stuck in my head. I thought that'd be it, Mrs. Solomon says, a sigh of relief washing the frown from her face. I told my friend that your dad was Dan Drake, astronaut and all-round genius. The funny thing is, you made a mistake in the equation anyway. She points halfway down the page and, following her fingertip, I see the letter G scribbled in the margin. My friend thought at first that you'd included gravity in the equation, but the thing is scientists haven't worked out how to fit this into their theory of everything. She looks up at me with a smile. You got my friend excited for a minute though, Jamie. She thought I had the next Albert Einstein in my class. Dad says it's gravity that keeps the International Space Station spinning around the world. Well, if Mrs. Solomon's friend is right, maybe the Hive have worked out how it keeps the universe spinning too. Mrs. Solomon! The booming sound of the headteacher's voice makes me jump in surprise. We're all ready in the hall for you now, Mr. Hayes announces, peering around the classroom door. So if you'd like to bring along our special guest... I look around in confusion. The rest of the class have already gone. Apart from me and Mrs. Solomon, there's nobody else here, unless my teacher has hidden this mystery guest inside her stock cupboard. Come on, Jamie, Mrs. Solomon says. It's time for assembly. And that's when I realise the head teacher is talking about me.